I remember the day I just broke down in tears and kind of gave up was also the day I became a really good horse trainer.
We want to have a reason why we feed a certain way, why we train a certain way, and a mindset to be more sustainable in a world that is getting quite chaotic, and obviously with the social media overlap.
I get approached by so many brands, and I can see the temptation where I could go, oh, I'm going to make so much money out of social media and this is fantastic. But it's like anything, you can expire so quickly.
Welcome everyone to episode 120 of the Send Nutrition Podcast. You're with your host Brian today, and today this is a very anticipated podcast, and I'm really excited to have Amber Matthews on. And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. And to our listeners that are unaware of Amber Matthews, Amber has risen in the social media following or equestrian influencer world. And the unique thing about Amber's account is she keeps it real. She's a little vulnerable at times, and removing that perfect filter that social media can portray in the equestrian world. And we will get into how we linked up further on, but let's talk to Amber now and showcase who she is and how she has risen in the social media space. So Amber, let's start. Congratulations with your recent engagement. It was all over social media with Luke. Have you recovered from the party?
Yeah, just. I'm just now coming back to reality.
Yeah, and it was in Sydney, I understand.
It was. He's from Sydney and I'm from Victoria. So it's kind of like everything we do in Victoria, we then go and do in Sydney, and everything we've done in Sydney, we do in Victoria. For someone with a terrible fear of flying, it's been a life experience, that's for sure.
True. And with, I think, particularly your social media, you do share everything.
Yeah.
And it can be quite daunting at times what you let the public see in, but particularly TikTok and Instagram, your following, if you want to take us through how that has risen in the past, well, under a year, you'd say?
Yeah, it's around August, September. So I used to be in social media management and strategy and influencer marketing with startups. And like a lot of startups in this kind of environment, a lot of them I was let go, and then looking at other jobs in the space because I still kind of, there's something about high risk that I like. I could have gone and kind of worked with safer companies, but I like that startup sort of thing. Having worked in the influencer marketing though, I had a really behind the scenes idea of what I would look for in influencers that I wanted to work with. And I kind of went, what if I just did this myself? I've been on social media for years and years with my AM equine horse training, but nothing to that extent. So I kind of just applied everything that I would look for in an influencer in myself and realized there was actually a huge gap in the equestrian market, because a lot of it, that it's a weird space that it's almost perfect even when it's not. So I used to find that a lot of the times when people posted stuff that wasn't perfect, it was a fall or something really, really, I want to say clickbaity. That it was still posted in a manufactured way for a particular result. There was no one just being kind of raw and open about life. A lot of my stuff is, sometimes it isn't even horsey. I talk a lot about my body image issues. I was a model back in the day. I speak about my like gut issues, mental health, just all sorts of things that I think tie into an equestrian lifestyle that are absolutely not glamorous. But I think that ended up being the difference in my niche, that instead of following me and seeing how I'm competing or how I'm training my horses, or, you know, oh, I fell off the Ludo this day, instead it was this kind of all-encompassing lifestyle. And I think that's what people gravitated towards following, because there just wasn't really anything like that out there, I found. I know I was posting content that I kind of wish I had been able to see when I was younger. And a lot of what I post is, you know, it's embarrassing stuff that you kind of want to keep to yourself. But I don't know, I'm a bit of a chronic oversharer, so I don't tend to mind. And the more I post that sort of stuff, the more followers I was getting and the more people I felt like I was helping, which then just started creating this cycle of I wanted to post more and more vulnerable stuff. Every time I felt down, every time something happened, whether it was in life, whether it was my horses, I wanted to post it in case it would relate to somebody. And then, yeah, more and more people started to relate to what I was posting, and kind of here we are.
Yeah. And it's like an outlet for your followers who can see that real genuine person within. And I know from myself, from looking at Instagram for many years now, there has been that shift away from the more manufactured kind of production to a more real setting, which is nice. But I know you made a point there that it was only taken so far. People would still manufacture the bad times, and we're not really revealing the truth of what actually happened or portrayed it. And I think people can see through that non-genuine way, and the way your following has grown, I think you've showcased it in a way that people feel comfortable, and then obviously they're telling their friends and you're getting that exposure. And I understand, I think your TikTok's at over 160,000 followers, and Instagram is way up there as well. It's astronomical numbers.
Yeah, Instagram's 22 and YouTube's now like 130. I think there's over 300 across everything, which is just the craziest. It's insane.
Yeah, and I think you come across that you are not doing it for your followers. You're doing it as to showcase the real you, the real way the equestrian world can be. And you do you do not take any topic off limits, I can see.
Yeah, I never thought it would be, like I said, when I quit my job, I was still that influencer space. I've always still been in horse training. I've also got a horse training business on the side. So I think I was in this kind of very privileged position coming onto social media where if I was able to somehow work that into my job as well, fantastic, but it wasn't a pressure like I had to, you know, make money from social media because I had the horse training. So instead of posting content that I would put pressure on myself that, okay, is this going to do well? Is this going to get views? I posted what I genuinely just wanted to post. And if it worked, it worked. If it didn't work, it didn't work. It didn't matter. And I think that also comes through as well. There's a lot of people that will post content and, you know, it'll do well. And then they'll copy a video they see did well. And there's not a lot of just authentic content out there anymore. I know a lot of my videos get like copied quite a fair bit, which I think that is also not the greatest thing about social media, is that a lot of the time now people are just trying to do what they think works and what will get them views and what will hopefully turn them into an influencer. And I think that was also exhausting. I think we're also in a space of becoming de-influenced. We are just seeing a lot through influencers a lot more than we used to.
Yeah, 100%. And whether they're genuine at pushing a particular product, and also it's not sustainable being fake on social media now, I don't think. Would you agree?
No, everyone, like I was saying, everyone sees through it. De-influencing now is such a big word because, you know, everything that I get approached by so many brands, and I can see the temptation where I could go, oh, I'm going to make so much money out of social media and this is fantastic. But it's like anything, you can expire so quickly. And if it doesn't make sense to your audience, then they're going to lose all trust and all faith in you. And for me, especially with the sort of content I post, for me, making money off it really isn't the priority. The priority is trust, because I post such vulnerable stuff that then a lot of people will send me messages privately telling me things that they've related to. And that is, to me, something really, really important that I don't want them to now think, oh, you know, Amber that I used to trust and relate to is now just selling out. And it's weird. It feels like this really close friendship I have with all of these people because, like, I tell them such private things. It's weird. I feel like I always just feel like I'm on FaceTime. Like, especially yesterday, I had a video where I didn't ride my horses, so I was just feeling crappy and I was feeling guilty about it. And I set my phone up in my car while I'm like emotionally eating a thing of Pringles. And I post on the internet. Like, that's not something, if 15-year-old me knew what I was posting on the internet, I'd be horrified. Absolutely horrified.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, Amber. In terms of like where Sen is in the equestrian world and in that social media space, we also get hit up daily, even multiple times a day, to have a horse owner or rider wanting an ambassador account with us. And the first question is, do you use our products? And sometimes the person approaching says no. And the thing is, we want a real connection with our ambassadors. And that's what we feel we have with you, because if you didn't like our products or if you didn't get the result, you would be honest back to us and just say, this is not for me. But we've grown our partnership in a pretty slow manner, which is not forced or manufactured or with any high demand. And I think that natural connection is much more sustainable than something that's fully demanded on the spot.
Yeah, I agree. I try to only really work with brands that either have reached out to me and I've been, you know, I like to either have a conversation with them for a month. I have a couple Zoom meetings. Like, I want to really know this person, or brands that I reach out to that I genuinely want to try, and I can share that experience with my followers. And that's exactly how I ended up with you guys. I remember I was so lost with Veluda. He'd lost like 100 kilos. I had spent thousands and thousands on testing him for, we were doing cancer tests. We were testing him for, we thought he was dying.
Yep.
And I tried every hard feed. I tried everything under the sun except for Sen because of the cost. Yep. And then one of my clients was like, I think you should just try Sen. And I remember I was like, I had been sharing Veluto's journey and I was like, if I'm going to try another hard feed, I'm going to share it. So I reached out to you guys, and I remember as soon as I tried it, I was like, this is insane. And I think the best part about that journey was I had told my followers I'd reached out to you guys, and I'm trying it, and I documented the journey, and if it didn't work, there would have been no
filter.
Yeah, they saw Veluto over that month all of a sudden start eating his food, start gaining weight, look like a healthy horse again, and it literally was in front of their faces. There was going to be no possible way of, you know, I couldn't have gone to stuff and fatten him and be like, oh, yeah, it's great. Mm. You then. Everyone actually saw the difference in him. And I think that's how I like to do partnerships. And a lot of my partnerships are long-term. I work with very few brands, and brands that want to work with me over a long period of time, because I genuinely want to build relationships. And I think that's another important thing as well. Not just, you know, going, okay, I'll take $1,000 here, $1,000 there, and I'll plug this product and I'll plug that product. That's just exhausting.
Yeah, and for the wrong reason. Because at the end of the,
so bad.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think our mindsets align that we're here for the horse at the end of the day. We're not here to really push things down viewers' throats or listeners' throats just to make a sale. We want to have a reason why we feed a certain way, why we train a certain way, and a mindset to be more sustainable in a world that is getting quite chaotic, and obviously with the social media overlap can be really quite mentally draining at times. And I think with all our ambassadors for Sen, we are all aligned in that manner. And it's a testament to our products, the result that you did get. We never stop innovating. So even now, the challenging times with ingredients and taking no shortcuts, our supplements, our feeds are at the best quality because we feed our own horses this, and we don't want to just produce a product just to sell. We want it for a reason and to have a really high impact result on a horse's health. And backed with my scientist background, it can be checked, so there's no smoke and mirrors. And it's just great to have Amber, you part of that Sen team, to really showcase what potential you can have in feeding and feeding more efficiently.
Yeah, it's incredible. And like, all my horses are on it now. So I've got Veluto on it, who used to be, you know, the worst doer of all time, and he now looks fantastic. I've got my big fat Clardy Cross on it, and I've got my 4-year-old Warm Blood on it, and they're all just happy. Like, that's the biggest thing. I think everyone, I mean, it's not just feed, but so much about the horse world. Everyone wants quick results. Everyone wants, you know, extreme results. And I think the thing with Sen is my horses are just consistent. They are happy, consistent, every day. Their mood never changes. Their coat always looks fantastic. Their weight always looks fantastic. It's just sustainable, which is so important.
Yep. And for our listeners that are not aware of Sen, but you probably are, or watching Amber, you've been exposed to it. It's all about getting that hindgut right, because it's so important. And this is only one aspect that, when you look at feeding your horse, do not compare it to another horse. They're all individuals, and you have to take the time to work them out like a puzzle piece. And like us humans, we react to different foods. This is a feed program or feed supplements that are most suited for a horse's physiology, and it's been well researched. And I just can't thank you enough, Amber, for showcasing those results in a big way with the exposure you have. And I just feel that genuine alignment in both our mindsets for horses in general, but then also I think in life in general too.
100%.
So Amber, let's take a little journey back to when you first started with horses and how you got into this industry. And this will be quite fascinating because then it will bring on some controversial topics that you do tackle in your social media accounts.
Yeah, so I started with horses very young. My mum's uncle was a horse breaker, which is ironic now. And my mum was a really good rider, really gutsy rider. And of course, she wanted her kid to ride. She put me in riding lessons. And between the ages of 8 and 12, I hated it. I loved ponies, but I would go to riding lessons and I would sit there and I would bore my eyes out. I was always a really tall kid. I'm 5'10" now. I don't know how tall I was, but I was put on the Shetland ponies and I just sit there and cry. It was ridiculous. And thank God for my mum, she persisted. And then I started to get my confidence up around 11. When I was 12, we moved to the Mornington Peninsula and we got our first horse to share. So this is the start of my seven horses, which I own all seven of my horses still, and not by choice necessarily. So Ollie was that inter-school type of horse. I went to a private girls' school on the peninsula and it was a very, very equestrian-focused school. Their equestrian team, it was like the Olympics.
Wow.
So I felt like I had to go to inter-schools. And Mum and I went and bought a horse that had done inter-schools, but he was an off-the-track thoroughbred and he didn't look fantastic. And back then, feeding was not a priority like it was now. And he was good for about a year. I then moved him somewhere else and a vet pumped him with steroids to make him look beautiful. And he lost his marbles and became unrideable pretty much ever since. He was a really grumpy horse. He bolted on my mum. We tried to sell him and he was then abandoned. So we took him back and just retired him. Then I went and got my second horse, Josh, who ended up also being a chronic bolter. He was half Welsh, and I actually just think he hated me. So I was about 14 at this point. I've still never made it to an inter-school. I then go and buy my third horse, Mickey, who was an absolute dream, and 2 months into owning him, he gets kissing spine, which, again, back then, you couldn't really do anything about it. So he was then retired. I was then 15, 16, had still never made it to an inter-school. All my friends are doing pony club events. They're doing everything. I've got not a single ribbon to my name. And at this point, I can't get any more horses. Like, my mum's pumped so much money into it. And I'd kind of just started to lose love for it. I then started leasing these, like, old horses that I would just ride around the paddocks and get my confidence up. Then when I was about 17 in my year 12 of school, I went and bought a quite expensive, beautiful, warm blood show jumping schoolmaster named Graham. And he was always ridden by men. And he was really nice when I got him. And then I had no idea what I was doing. I was going down the traditional show jumping route. I don't know if my coach necessarily was prepared for how inexperienced I was, but I just said I wanted to compete. And I think that this was the start of that era of almost being able to buy your way into the sport. And I would take this horse to Bonio and I entered the meter five, I think 10 or 11 times, and I got thrown off every time. I actually never completed a round on him, ever. He then did his suspensory. So I'm now 4 for 4 horses are done. The only success I've had is I think I did one pony club rally on one of my horses, and that was it. And I had finished year 12. I'd also dropped out of year 10 and 11 from school. So I went back and finished my year 12. I got my ATAR, did all that, but I knew I didn't want to go to university. I had used to want to work with horses, but, you know, obviously show jumping wasn't going to be it. So now I was just out of luck there too, and I didn't know what to do. And down the road from me at a place called Tubberubba Arabians, Lara Beth had just started the Australian Brumby Challenge. And I'd always been fascinated by this Australian Brumby Challenge. And I decided to go down and just meet them and their Brumbies. And they were using this system of horse training that was like natural horsemanship, but it wasn't so hippie woo-woo. It made sense. I saw the results in front of my eyes and I just thought it was the most incredible thing ever. And I decided to become a working student. I was working at Gunnamatta Trail Rides on the Mornington Peninsula, and I decided to take an almost a gap year.
At that point,
and then after,
is that when you had even more love for the horse, when you could sort of pivot to that kind of thing, like away from the show
at
jumping?
At this point, I was just lost because I had always wanted to be a show jumper. All my friends had gone and done inter-school. Some of my friends were competing top level show jumping, and I had, in my mind, I had failed at horses. So this was just a kind of almost like a, I don't know what else to do with my life. So I'm just going to take a year and play with these. They were Arabs at this place where they were training horses. So I started breaking in Arabians and doing endurance on Arabians. And Lara took me in as a working student, taught me everything I needed to know. I became obsessed with it. I would either go to Tub Rubber before or after work. So I would be getting up at 6 and sometimes not leaving, you know, work until 7, and then I would go to the Arabians and I would hang out there until 10 o'clock at night. And then I kept doing this. I deferred uni again, and I ended up then applying and getting in for the Australian Broadly Challenge. So this was in 2018, and this is when my entire life changed. I got this, he's tattooed on my ankle. His name was Wrangler, and he was randomly assigned to me, and he was this wild horse that, if anyone doesn't know the Australian Brumby Challenge, you get a totally wild horse and you have 150 days to tame them, and then you have to compete them over 4 days at Equitana, which Equitana is just at another level again.
Wow, yeah.
And I got him, and for the first 100 days, and this is also the start of my social media, so I vlogged every single day of this challenge, and I think I ended up doing like 100 YouTube vlogs. And in one of these YouTube vlogs, I broke down in hysterics crying because it was day 98, and everyone was on their Brumbies and doing, you know, we're coming down to the end of it, and my Brumby was still quite literally trying to kill me and climb out of round yards, and I was just like, what am I doing? I failed again at this. And I kind of had this breakdown. I accepted I wasn't going to Equitana. It was all too much. And then all of a sudden a light flicked and everything started to fall together. And I started to work out how much of my horse riding career had been driven by ego. I wanted to do inter-schools because everyone else was doing it. I wanted to win ribbons because that made me a better rider. I wanted to be one of the first ones to get on the Brumby because then I was the best at the Brumbies. Everything was ego-driven. And this, I remember the day I just broke down in tears and kind of gave up was also the day I became a really good horse trainer, because I stopped becoming attached to the outcome. I didn't care if I got to Equitana. I didn't care if I didn't look cool on social media. I didn't care if I didn't win a ribbon. I just took every day as it came. And everything changed with my Brumby. We ended up making it to Equitana. All 4 days were incredible. He was super quiet. I ended up buying him. I ended up not putting him in the auction because I became so attached to him. I still have him. And I then started AM Equine, my horse training business. And so much about my experience with him compared to my experience going down a traditional equestrian route made me have all of the mindset and the ideas that I have now, which is where a lot of that controversy comes in, because there's so much about traditional riding that I think is so wrong. And not in the sense of, you know, a lot of people complain about bits and spurs and all that stuff. I don't really care about that stuff. But so much of the equestrian world now is so focused on winning ribbons and having expensive horses, and it's so much of an image now versus I think that actual love for horses. And it took me getting a wild Brumby that's, you know, a 14 hand shaggy little overgrown donkey to actually realize that, because I was in that mindset of I have to be doing what everyone else is doing and I have to be competing because there is no other way to be in the horse industry. This is it.
Do you think the maturity at that point of your life had anything to do with the build up to that mindset change? Because that's quite big to realize that and then pivot or drop the ego to then push forward to what you're doing now or today.
Definitely. I mean, I talk a lot about it on social media as well, which I think is where that vulnerability comes into it. I was modeling professionally at 15 and left school because of mental health issues. And I think going through that combined with horses, I don't know what it is, but going through a really vulnerable life experience and having something as simplistic as horses. You know, I thought I wanted to be this model with this like show jumping career and all this stuff. And then that didn't make me happy. And I was fighting for this kind of extreme lifestyle to then strip it back to, like I said, an overgrown donkey of a horse. Like Brumbies are not, he's beautiful now, but when they come out of the wild, they are not flashy. Pretty. There's nothing else. To have him and, you know, I remember the day he walked up to me, the day I didn't walk into his stable and he pinned himself in a corner, the day he actually went, okay, you don't scare me anymore. I want to be with you. Like that was a more of an achievement for me than anything else I had ever done in my life.
Yeah.
It was so simple and it was so fulfilling. And that was when I realized, you know, I don't need ribbons or photos from shows of me jumping big jumps to be fulfilled. I need to do something that actually gives me purpose. And that was how I ended up in horse training. And a lot of my social media, I think, gives me a purpose because all of these life experiences I've gone through, I feel like I have a reason to have gone through them. It's, I get to share that with people now. And, you know, I'm sure there's other people that go through exactly, like I would as well with the horse industry now, I would really struggle, I think, growing up in the current horse industry. It's definitely getting harder and harder. Like you definitely didn't hear of kids importing horses back when I was in high school.
Okay, yeah.
But I know now there's lots of, you know, the horses are getting fancier. The competitions are getting fancier. Like our inter-school show jumping used to be in grass arenas at a place called Air Hill. Now it's at Bonio Park on a Martin Collins arena. So it's, and that's a lot of where the controversy with me comes in again, I think, because I challenge a lot of these ideas that people identify themselves with and find a, not a purpose, but I know when you are one of the best show jumpers, it can almost be hard to accept that isn't the be all and end all. I know a lot of riders get really upset with me when I say I don't really care about winning ribbons because that's how they identify themselves within the horse industry.
Yeah.
And challenging someone else's belief, people don't like.
It's confronting. Yeah.
It's really confronting, and which I get 100% because, you know, I remember being 16. If someone had said to me, stop show jumping, stop doing what you're doing and just go have fun with horses, I would have said, no, I don't want to. Like, this to me is fun. And it wasn't fun, but like everything on social media, you want to fit in. You want to fit in so badly in the horse world, and that does feel like the only way to fit in a lot of the time. And finding a purpose in this industry, in this sport, beyond winning ribbons and eventing and show jumping and dressage, it's just really uncommon.
Do you think it's kind of lacking, or it's shifted to a lack of the human horse connection and using them as more of a vehicle in that sense? Like to get ribbons or to compete? Obviously that's a blanket response, but like parts of it?
Yeah, I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day that there are little things in the horse industry that have changed that I think have made a lot of difference. I remember back in the day, I say back in the day like I'm 70 years old. A decade ago.
We were 70 years old when we were working out the sound here.
But all the horse moves. I remember the saddle club. So the saddle club, Veronica was the bratty one. And, you know, Stevie, Carol and Lisa, they were the cool ones. And they were kind of, they loved their horses. And then you had Heartland come out. And Heartland was all about this natural horsemanship. And Amy Fleming was the greatest thing ever. And you had movies like Flicker come out, which again was like the wild Mustang. Yeah. And then someone the other day asked me if I'd seen the new Flicker. And new Flicker is I think she's like a dressage horse. Same with the new, there's a new, I have no idea. The other movie was the Ginger and stuff. But the movies now are transitioning to things like Free Rein, where they are more English focused. And those themes of loving the horse are just starting to disappear a little more in other elements of the horse industry, which that's what kids are watching now. And that's what they're being conditioned to. Like I remember, watching the Saddle Club, you wanted to be Carol, Lisa and Stevie. You didn't want to be Veronica. And now in these TV shows where it's becoming more focused around the equestrian sport versus the horse, you know, you want to go out and compete and win the ribbons and you want to do what you're seeing in these TV shows. And then you're going on social media. And on social media, it's, I remember Instagram used to be about posting beautiful photos. At the very start of Instagram, everyone was posting photos of their horses, not them riding. You would go out into your paddock and, you know, take a photo of your horse with a filter. Now it's professional competition photos. That is all I see on social media. So these themes in the horse industry are starting to transition so much more to almost just being about shows and just being about competing and just being about winning ribbons versus, you know, My Little Pony. They didn't even ride the horses. They were, you know, they were unicorns and pegasuses, and now you haven't got that. You've got, I just think there's those themes that change in the whole horse industry that it would be hard now to be in the horse industry and think there is something other than competing out there because it's all you see.
So a purpose beyond competing.
Yeah, and I mean, even like gymkhanas. Gymkhanas, and I think Pony Club is dying, which doesn't help either. I know a lot of kids now that used to go to Pony Club, instead of going to Pony Club, they go and do the low-level show jumping competition.
Is Pony Club expensive Pony, now?
It's so expensive. And the difference with it, even because less people are doing it and more people are going to shows, the coaching quality isn't as great. But then also I go to Pony Club rallies and I coach them every now and then. There are very few Pony Clubs doing fun things. Pony Club used to chase balls around, used to do trail rides. You go to Pony Club now and you have a cross-country show jumping and dressage lesson. So again, we are just reinforcing that you need to be eventing. Yeah. You need to always be competing. There isn't this option to do something else. Like I remember when I did the Brumby Challenge, quite a few Pony Clubs booked us to take the Brumbies down and everyone got to do some groundwork with the Brumbies. And when I did one Pony Club rally, I remember playing games at the end. All the groups came together, no matter how old you were, no matter what level you were, and you all did a group mounted games kind of class. So there's just, it would be, I do think it would be hard now in the equestrian sport to think there is a life or think there is a world in horses beyond competing because you just don't see it. And if you do see it, your friends aren't doing it. It's not cool. It's not what you would do to fit in. It's just, it's a really tough industry, I think, in that sense.
It definitely, the shift, you would think it would get better to that connection to the horse. And you bring up really valid points, Amber, in that landscape. And it's no wonder you've got a following because you talk about it with such conviction, such realness, and you're not lecturing the person on the other end. You're just saying about the experiences you've had and then sort of having that open conversation with the camera or like FaceTime just to stir that thinking. And I think you're having a great influence in the equestrian world to help open people's mindsets because 15-year-old you listening to an older version of yourself, I think it may trigger a few seeds of changing that mindset earlier on.
I would have been offended by it, me now.
True.
If I had spoken to 15-year-old me, I would have thought I was wrong, I was stupid, I would not have wanted to listen.
So do you have 15-year-old followers now?
I do, and it's funny because I think a lot of them are a lot of the younger followers that I think watch me because there is something in them that resonates with what I'm saying.
Yep.
I think it's whether they follow me from something else, then over time they see what I'm saying, they see what I'm doing. I think I didn't surround myself with people like me. I remember on social media, I would go on and I would follow, you know, I'd go through the Longines Global Champions Tour following, I'd follow all the top show jumpers. I would then follow everyone in the interschool space and that would be it. I didn't want to listen to people like me. And I think that's the one good thing with TikTok, sometimes on your For You page, when you're scrolling like that, as much as I say scrolling isn't a great thing to do,
Yeah. You
didn't have a scroll back then. And now you can sometimes stumble across things you wouldn't normally want to look at, but something is said and you go, hang on, actually I'm a bit interested in that. Whereas when it used to be on Instagram, you go on someone's page, look at five photos and go, no, they're not jumping high enough, next. No, their photos aren't clear enough, next. You didn't listen to what they were saying. You were never open to listening to something new. So I do think that short form videos where you can be grabbed by something you wouldn't normally be grabbed by is it might have made a difference when I was younger, because social media now is just transitioning into a different way that has its downfalls, but I also think has its positives in that sense.
Yeah, it's fully gone more media than social, I feel. And
yeah,
I think it's the timing. So if your mindset is not into accepting a different view at that point of time when you're scrolling, then obviously you won't take it in. But the more chances of seeing something controversial and then accepting it with your mindset in the right spot at the right time of the day, then I can see that that could change for the better for the younger generation. We're talking like we are, like 50 or 60.
Yeah. And there's this almost extremist view in the horse world, which I think is starting to get better. Like it used to be you were either bitless or you rode with a bit. You know, you used spurs and two dressage whips, or you had nothing. There was no being open to natural horsemanship and a performance horse, you know, using the pressure you have to use and not the pressure that you don't need to use, in the sense that I remember when I was younger, I would wear spurs. Had no idea why I was using them. No one educated me, but everyone else was using them, so I used them. Now I think there's more education around the gear we're using. People are more conscious and aware of the things they're doing with their horse, which is one positive change I've seen. Like I used to, well, when I was breaking in the Brumby, he didn't like bits at one point. And I decided to ride him in a halter. And so many people, you know, were saying, oh, are you riding bitless now? You're a bitless, you know, all this sort of thing. Whereas now I'm seeing a lot more riders just using bitless bridles, but not having to say they're a bitless rider. And I think that sort of mindset around social media of just being open to trying new things and, oh, you saw someone do that, so I'm going to do that too. You don't have to identify with one thing and that being it. I mean, we see lots of now, you know, I think Matt Harnick's he's been a really positive influence in the space, because he's a very good dressage rider, but he also does trick training, you know. He's got these expensive, beautiful, imported, I think they're Spanish horses, but they still get to run around the paddock. It's showing that you can do more than just put yourself in one box, and then anything that isn't in your box, you get offended by. I think that used to be the issue as well, is that you would identify yourself with one group, and then anything that wasn't your group, you would attack. Whereas now people are starting to slowly, you know, I see more people wanting to do Wenglish, they're calling it, of horses that can do Western and English. Like that's really completely pushing all the boundaries of everything we ever imagined with horses.
Yeah.
But I think when people start doing that and realizing, you know, their life and their limits with their horses is so much more than just whatever title or discipline they put themselves into, the more we're going to just enjoy horses again and love horses and go, okay, there's so much I can do with my horse beyond just train and feed them, and that's it.
Well, do you think it'll shift to that point?
I think it slowly will, only because I think top-level riding is becoming more controversial.
Yeah.
I saw top-level riding become more of a money sport than it's ever been, and the issue with that is it's got to get bigger and it's got to get harder. And the show jumps got bigger and bigger. The cross-country fences got bigger and bigger. And a lot of top sport now, a lot of people find controversial, because a lot of people now are saying, well, hang on, I think now we're pushing the limits too far. I think now what we're asking of top-level horses isn't fair. So people no longer just aspire to be a top-level rider. They start to think, okay, there's actually more I want to do with my horse and in my life than just jump a 5-star cross-country fence or, you know, jump a meter 60 show jumping. It's becoming more almost socially acceptable to look beyond that. And I think the young horse space is becoming a lot more interesting, which I think equally controversial, because I don't believe in a lot of the young horse classes.
Yep.
But a lot more people are wanting to produce their own young horse instead of just buy a horse and get to the top level. You know, things like trick training. I'm seeing so many people becoming so interested in liberty work, and there's definitely a shift happening. If it will ever completely happen, probably not, because, again, it's one of those sports that it's always going to be a status sport that someone will want to do purely just for the status of it.
True.
But I do think we're shifting back to a space where the horse is becoming the priority. I mean, even I'm seeing the way people are feeding their horses, like what you talk about, you know, the horse being an individual. And I know one of the things that you said about Sen when I started, which I love, is that you were just trying to supplement what we don't naturally give our horses anymore.
Yeah.
Things like that, that is so natural. Whereas I remember 5 years ago, the first thing I would go into the feed shop is I'd go in and go, okay, what have you got to build top line? Like I would just expect something to give me that result. What have you got for a thoroughbred? What have you got for a hot horse? We didn't consider the horse to be a person that, you know, needs certain requirements or certain needs. We would just go in and say, this is what I want my animal to look like, or this is the breed my animal is. Give me what he needs.
Yeah, that's so true. And even at the start of Sen, nearly 10 years ago, Peter and I, we accidentally came across a sick horse and asked the trainer. We weren't even in this space. I was a scientist in a lab understanding all about human health, the way the human body works. And then there was a horse sick, continually getting sick. And it was just my kind of inquisitive look at health and supporting the body systems of the horse. Was that trainer doing that? And to my shock, they weren't. And then when I kept digging in the industry from clear eyes, no preconceived ideas of how to feed a horse, stripped it right back to see what supports the body systems, and the trainer was not supporting the immune system or the other body systems. And then when we looked at the landscape and the nutritionists in Australia, we weren't finding the answers. We had to consult the holistic nutritionists in America to say, you need this type of profile, but then you need to find these ingredients. And that's how Sen was born at the start. And there's always a way and a reason to feed this particular way, because it's for the horse at the end of the day to make them more efficient, to make them more focused, and to make them feel good, because we're bringing them into domestication away from nature. And as we said before, Amber, we're just correcting the shortfalls that we're depriving them of in that natural setting. So everything is done for a reason through life. Like even our mindsets, when we look at ourselves and we come to a particular problem, we sometimes have to drop everything and not have that preconceived idea to handle that problem, just see the problem in front of us and then work through it in a nice, focused manner. But that's easier said than done. I totally agree with you in terms of the way that we approach life, training, feeding. It all comes from that individual standpoint, and then we kind of want to work to the solution for the betterment of the horse's life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny you talk about having the horse back in its natural state. But when I brought Wrangler in from the wild, he looked incredible. His feet were actually really good. He was 4 years old. And as soon as I could, I pumped him with a hard feed, because all horses need hard feed and he needs to look shiny. And all of a sudden he got more aggressive. His coat went really bad. He had really bad poo. Like, it was just disgusting. And I ended up, for the entire duration of owning him before the challenge, I ended up just feeding him hay. He was banned from hard feed. I said, I actually can't hard feed this horse. I have to just give him hay. And that felt so wrong. I thought I was completely abandoning and neglecting my horse. Because I was like, what do you mean my horse isn't on hard pellets? Yep. Like, my horse has to eat hard pellets. There's no way he can survive off hay and grass, this wild horse that's foraged for his feed for the past 4 years. There's no way.
Yeah, correct. And I think the key thing for our listeners is when a horse is in their natural setting in the wild, they have less stress than a horse that's in domestication, asked to compete, and the performance. The effect on the hindgut, which is kind of the engine room where everything exists in terms of the immune system, the way they digest, it is the centerpiece that needs to be looked after. And what Sen has done is we feed this, but also support the shortfalls. For example, the grassy hay that you feed is depleted in omega-3, which is high in grass. So our Sen oil, which is the leading horse oil in the market, plugs that gap. So it brings the domestication setting into a more natural way to help the healing and recovery and support the body systems. And we pride ourselves on our quality. It's first cold pressed. We want what's best for the horse. We want that food grade oil because omega-3 is very fragile, and we've been tried and tested over the years and obviously have the success at the very top level, but then in every level of the equestrian world, including Amber's horses.
Yeah. Had I correctly fed him, who knows what he would have been like? It's funny. I remember was, I can't remember what I gave him, but it was sugary. I remember it was sweet, and it just did not work for him. And then Veludo was also a horse that was very food sensitive. And after Wrangler and I got Veludo, I ended up putting, he pretty much just ate hay as well, because I just couldn't find a feed that worked for him.
Yeah.
And then since being on Sen, every time now someone says to me their horse is feed reactive, I find it hard to believe, because it's like, I've had feed reactive horses. But if you find the feed that works for them, like you said, not just going, I'm going to chuck a different bag of feed at them every week and see if something sticks, actually understanding them, understanding why I feed Veluda what I feed him, understanding what Wrangler really did need coming out of the wild, it would have been such a different thing. Like, to blame horses saying that their behavior comes down to if they can tolerate feed or not, I think is almost weird now that we have such a big, we prioritize being gluten-free or vegan or vegetarian, or dairy doesn't work for me, or soy doesn't work for me. But when it comes to our horses, we kind of just throw a random hard feed at them. And if it doesn't work, we just claim, okay, hard feed doesn't work.
Yeah. And
it's really interesting.
Yeah. And also supporting those systems, or the hindgut in particular, because it is where 90% of the serotonin is made, other hormones, and that gut-brain connection is real. So to have a horse that is more willing to work will have a better digestive system intact. And it's all about supporting that with the right nutrient ratios. And then obviously every horse is different with how they're treated as an individual when they're younger, and then, or even when they're fed younger, they can be predisposed to other metabolic problems. So that's why Sen prides ourselves on that individual contact with owners that are having problems or need to make a tweak. We can give you the advice, because we do this week in, week out. We have a number that people call at the office, and they can get that advice on the spot to try, and we might need to tweak that further on, but we're like scientists for our horses. We're always trying to get and make them improve one step at a time, so then you know where you stand at the end of the day, and you're not wasting time and money, as maybe what would have happened back in the day as human and horse health has progressed. And I think, just on a side note, coming into the industry over 10 years ago and not having those preconceived ideas, trainers were feeding their horse cooking oil, and it absolutely blew my mind that something a human would not eat, which is pro-inflammatory as well, would be forced to be fed to a horse. And I still to this day don't know how it all happened, but then obviously Sen Oil was born, and it took that place to really help the horse's overall health, and is a way better profile that actually makes sense with nature. So I think that's probably the theme of Sen.
I mean, I actually think what you said there pretty much sums up all of my rambling. I remember when I used to want to feed a horse, I would go on, there's this Facebook page, Aussie Horse and Nutrition. And I would look up, what are other people feeding their horse? You know, okay, a lot of people are feeding this hard feed, I'm going to go get that hard feed. And I didn't use it because my horse needed it. I used it because everyone else was using it. And now every time someone asks me what I feed my horses, I say, call Sen. Actually speak to Sen, and they will tell you, which that is not something you ever got. It was just, I'm going to try this hard feed. And then I remember I'd go on the Facebook page and you would say, I've tried this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. They don't work. Give me something new. You would never speak to someone that wanted to understand you and your horse. It wasn't a thing you did. You just tried hard feeds. Whereas now, like, especially with you guys, you can actually say, here is my horse. Here is what they have access to 24/7. What do they need? And then what do we need to do in the future?
Yes. And surprisingly, from a feed company and supplement company that we are, our first question is, how much roughage or how much hay and pasture does your horse have access to? Because if we don't have that foundation right, we're not going to advise you on any other supplements or feeds until you have what naturally they require. Because I find it shocking that to this day, a trainer will deprive a horse of roughage because a horse generates over 35 litres of acid a day in the stomach, which is rising continually every 15 minutes. And the horse's chewing on longer stem roughage promotes at least 30 litres of saliva to help buffer that acid rising. So that's nature's way of helping prevent ulcers in a horse in a sort of a stripped down setting. So basically, horse owners, maybe it should come with a manual, but yeah, feeding the horse at least 1.5% of their body weight in roughage, either in the grassy hay, pasture, or some form of chaff if their teeth are not good, it's what we promote and it's what we proudly promote. And then we can step the owner through where their shortfalls are. And if they got a hay analysis, even better.
It's such an overwhelming and unnecessarily complicated space, the horse feed.
I think it's ridiculous. It's chaotic.
Yeah, like, and it shouldn't, like, it's, I know nothing about horse feed. I know nothing about horse nutrition. And I spent 10 years just trying to figure it out. Whereas now you can actually speak to someone like you guys that just knows it. Like, so many horse owners, we don't know anything about horse nutrition and we're on Facebook pages trying to figure it out.
Yep.
And then we're going and feeding our 600 kilo animal these feeds, and then we're getting on and riding them and praying they don't throw us off that day. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so I think hopefully the next generation has that sort of leapfrog into nutrition for the horse. And what makes me happy is the horse is going to benefit at the end of the day, whatever way they go to, as long as they have the foundations right. And obviously with the help of you, Amber, and our other ambassadors, we can help educate and help horse owners understand their horse better in the way of feeding. And yeah, it's just, I really value our partnership in terms of that, because it's going to really help as many horse owners in Australia and even worldwide, because we get contacted by a lot of horse owners in America and Europe as well. And I'll give my time to help them get the foundations right of what's available over there, because at the end of the day, there's a horse on the other line and I want what's best for them, because I find them the most fascinating animal, the way they move, the way their physiology is. They're so unique and they give back so much to people, especially in their mental health as well, for that outlet. And our mindsets, Amber, in terms of the horse-human connection is so strong that we both believe in that it needs to come to the forefront, hopefully, in all the industries.
Exactly. And I mean, there's so much about horse feeding and just horses in general that there's so much shame around it. That I remember I've got a couple messages of people saying, oh, I don't know what to feed my horse. He looks like this. I'm really embarrassed. And I still say, just to talk to you guys, because I know, I mean, when I even reached out about Veluto, I said he's super skinny. My vet and I could only get him to eat one meal a day. I couldn't do the conditional, what you got told. I needed to do 3 meals a day. And, you know, he just wouldn't do it. And you guys actually just did a plan that worked for him. Instead of going, well, you need to get weight on him and, well, he has to eat 3 times a day, you considered him as an individual and went, well, he's not going to do that. So how can we get him to thrive in the best way that will suit him and the way that he wants to exist as a human being? Well, not human being, but exist as an individual.
Yeah. And,
which I think is so important.
Yeah, no, I think even our initial consult or contact, Amber, I think I disclosed at the end of it, we may need to make more tweaks in accordance to his response to it. And that should be the basis of feeding, even for ourselves as humans, because our bodies are all different and the way we react and respond to different inputs like food types, because, well, you've obviously got the differences in gender, because the female body has more hormone production in that sense. So you can't compare it to a male physiology. And yeah, it just fascinates me, but also makes sense for me, because I studied science or medical science, blood science. I was a blood scientist for over 15 years, and it really bodes well that a horse is a mammal, humans are mammals. The body systems are very, very similar, to the point that obviously there's different digestive pathways in the way it is. But when we look at the blood results, it's actually very familiar to me, because that's what I was doing day in, day out for humans. It was the same parameters for the body systems, the liver, the kidneys, whether there was an infection or inflammation present. So I feel right at home when I talk to vets and get that, give them that second opinion to help the horse at the end of the day. And it just so happens that I am one of the co-founders of Send, so that really helps line up the nutrition and helps the vets as well, because their knowledge is good. Some are very, very good, but it's only a small part of their course that they do.
Yeah, I think it's just so important. It's one of those things, horse feeding, that it overwhelmed me to a point I could not fathom. And I could not even try and think of all the things I fed over the years. I don't think I ever stuck with a single feed more than 3 months. It was out of control.
It's nice that you can.
I would just try anything.
It's nice that you'll hopefully stay with us for 3 to 30 years, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Slightly longer than 3 months.
Did you want to go through any questions that some of your followers are asking this morning?
Actually, this one, a lot of people always like to ask what my daily routine is, because I think my social media, it seems a bit bizarre. A lot of people ask me, what do you do for work? And this is another reason why I love the Send products. My horses get fed once a day, which freaks people out when they hear this. It terrifies them when I say they get fed once a day. But my lifestyle, I can't feed my horses 2 or 3 times a day. And I think that's one thing a lot of people struggle with as well with horse feeding, is somehow we've gotten into this mindset you have to give your horse breakfast, lunch and dinner. And if you aren't around to give your horse breakfast, lunch or dinner, you have to employ someone to give your horse their lunchtime feed. But I wake up, and now that I've got the puppy, I wake up a bit earlier because he wakes me up at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast.
Can we just touch on Brumby for a second?
Sorry. Yeah, my little Dalmatian.
The new addition to the household.
He's the cutest. He's actually about to start on his Send feeds when I come back from Byron, he's transitioning onto his Send supplements.
Fantastic.
Because, I mean, it's just one of those things. It's funny, the Send stuff. If I could eat it, I would, which I do. I have the collagen, actually. I take that back. I have the collagen. Yep. It just makes sense.
There'll be more coming
soon. But he's
going
to be on the oil, vitamin C, and the collagen.
Yep.
Which, they just, again, they're stuff that makes sense. And it's funny because I was explaining to Luke the other day why I'm going to feed him those things. If you had have said to me a year ago even that I know why I'm feeding my horse or my dog anything, I would have been mind blown. Like, I'm giving him the vitamin C because I know he's in a stressful period of his life, transitioning from a litter of puppies and a mum to now coming home, and he's got so much new smells, new sights, new everything. And then obviously the collagen, because I want him to grow up and be nice and strong, especially being a big dog. And I've had so many dogs with arthritis.
Yep.
And then the oil, just, I mean, I like to just say it's just, what was that video you posted that's in the champagne glass? That sums up the oil. It's just liquid gold.
Yeah.
It is the greatest stuff ever. We need Send oil for humans.
Watch this space.
Yeah, that's what I need. I'm sick of coconut oil. That's what I need. But so then my routine is, I get up, I look after him. I normally do emails in the morning because I think, like a lot of horsey people, I struggle to do things that don't require me moving around. I struggle to sit still. So I do that. I get up. I come out to the horses. My horses have 24/7 round bales. So I ride them. And then after they're ridden, they all get their hard feeds, which again freaks people out because they think you have to feed a big hard feed before you ride, which maybe that's something you should touch on. Because I know a lot of people freak out in my videos and say you cannot ride a horse before they've been hard fed.
You should basically not devoid them of roughage. So what Amber's doing is the 24/7 roughage is basically helping keep that stomach not empty. And then you ride, obviously, which will help lower that risk of acid splash for ulcers. But they're designed, unlike humans, to have something in their stomach to ride. But what needs to be in their stomach is not a full hard feed. It's just that nice ball of roughage that balls up in that gastric region. And then after that workout, the hard feed is important because obviously they are hungry. They'll eat it. What they're doing there is they're replenishing what was lost or the energy that was expelled in the performance. The protein digestion all the amino acids go into a pool, and when they're at rest, that's when they'll start their muscle recovery. But also, it is probably the best time for them to ingest, if there's any sugars and starches in that feed, where Amber feeds a low sugar, low starch, that's not the enemy. You can still have a little bit of sugar and starch because it'll help replenish the glycogen stores in the muscles, which helps them feel better and stronger for their next workout. But Amber's feed is totally balanced in that sense. And obviously you see the results that she has. So the 24/7 round bale is the absolute key to Amber's feeding routine in terms of feeding once a day.
I love that. It's so cool. Like, I never used to understand anything I did. I did so much that didn't suit me because I just thought I had to. And when you actually understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, so cool. But then after I've ridden and looked after all the horses, I'll go and ride client horses. I'll do lessons. Throughout the day, I make content. I mean, a lot of my content's pretty spontaneous. Unless I've got a video planned, I will do that. Throughout the day, I'll then go home. I spend an hour or so editing. I then post everything throughout the day. At some point, I eat something. I care a lot more about my horse's diet than mine. That's one thing that needs to change. My horse is at this nice formulated diet, and I'm eating when I can.
I can help you with that. And then,
oh, it's shocking. And then that's pretty much it. I post everything, and then I try to always put time aside to engage. I think I hate when I see influencers post videos and never ever ever interact with their community. I like to post when I can late at night, because then I like to be able to reply to comments as soon as they come in, as many as I can. So I like to, where I can, post when I then have time to just chill out and chat to people. And that's pretty much my day on an average basis.
The day in the life of Amber Matthews. And so I think I'll definitely have you on another podcast, because this has been fascinating. We should wrap this up because it is Friday. We all know what happens at Sen on Friday. There's gin o'clock at lunch, and I know you're partial to a gin as well.
I am. Yeah, I've got quite a few horses to ride, which I haven't quite started yet.
So I better let you go. But before I do, if you want to let our listeners know a little bit about your business, whether they can have a horse trained by you or have coaching in that sense, and also your social medias.
Yeah, so my horse training business is AM Equine, and then my social media, my Instagram is _AmberMatthews, my TikTok is Amber_Matthews, and YouTube, you can just look up Amber Matthews. I think if you look Amber Matthews up everywhere, though, it comes up.
Yep.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of popular.
Yeah, I think it comes up. I think we're at that point.
I think we're good. And from our end, if you enjoyed this podcast, jump on Spotify or Apple or your chosen podcast app. There is a 5-star rating system, and that really helps the algorithm as well. If anyone is searching for horse-related topics, as I understand, this is the #1 horse podcast in Australia, and you can send me an email if I'm wrong about that, and I'll correct myself. But I think with nearly 100,000 listens, 120 episodes, we're just trying to give our listeners value in trying to take away things about themselves or their horse to really apply in their daily lives. And I can't thank you enough, Amber, for coming on, giving us your time. And I can't thank you enough for the partnership and ambassador role that you play for Sen.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, I love any time I can come on and ramble, and then getting to ramble with you is even better.
And so until next time, we will roll into the weekend now. And I think, Amber, I'll let you go and ride the horses, and hopefully you and Luke have a great weekend.
Perfect. Thanks. You too.
Awesome. Thank you.